Hello, and welcome to the Learning College. My name is Alex Linder, and you can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com, permanently archived, all of our audio, that is, text and commentary on white nationalist, racial, historical, and other classics. Everything we do there is worthwhile. Today, we're going to resume with Mike Smith's 2024 novel, The Eradicator. We're going to do chapters 17 and 18, which are fairly short. Shorter than average a little bit. So let's dig right on into it. The Eradicator by Mike Smith, published in 2024. Chapter 17, Anything to Survive. Anything to Survive, chapter 17. A short, smooth-faced young man wearing musical comedy tights and a fitted military jacket led them out of the room and down a hallway which he accurately described as fabulous. It extended for 50 yards, dotted only with Mondrian's, Piet Mondrian, the painter, and other old-fashioned modern paintings, all originals from the 20th century, Piet Mondrian. Jake and Chad ended up before a native oak door with devil faces carved in it as finely as engravings. The young man said, "He'll see you now," and left them. "He seemed fabulous himself," Jake joked. "He looked like a queer," Chad said. They both thought that he was one of the soldiers who captured them. His jacket had seemed similar. They waited. They wondered who wanted to see them. It couldn't be Block, because this wasn't Block's house, unless he had a second place in San Jose, which seemed unlikely. "Should we go in?" Chad asked. The oak door opened. The same young man put his face out. "Gentlemen, you're to come this way." He directed them to a restroom adjoining the space they entered. After relieving themselves, Jake and Chad noticed that the space might be as big as a warehouse. It was too dark to make out its dimensions. As they stood there trying to survey it, the young man said, "You can have these back now." He handed over their driver's licenses. Evidently, they had been stolen and examined. Then he said pointedly to Chad, "And yes, I am queer." He bared his teeth, smiling. His teeth were covered in tiny diamonds and edged with cigarette stains. "Gentlemen, both of you, come in. You're welcome." "Thank you," the voice boomed from somewhere in this cavernous space. Jake and Chad made their way forward through several spotlit areas. The source of the voice came into view. Seated plumply on a black leather chair, a glass desk before him, Kyle Dale beckoned energetically. Kyle Dale. This surprised the two. Kyle Dale was Block's main rival and was as famous as him, about as rich, and featured in gossip media even more often. They knew that he invented some kind of computer chip 20 years ago. "What you did, I would never dare to do it. You did it." Dale had a speech defect or an odd way of speaking, but they could understand him. Chad looked at some other people who emerged from darkness. Two young men dressed like the first were pushing a wheelchair in. Chad went to her and held her hand. "What did you get? Shot?" he asked. Greta had a bandage on her shoulder and a bruise on her neck. "I'll live." "Patched," Dale said. "Sorry for the gunplay. You started it. Thanks." Greta got up partly and hugged Chad. He hugged her back. Dale said, "I must congratulate all of you for the kidnapping of the Pretender." He stood up. Bald and bespectacled like Block, he had wire-rimmed glasses, not heavy black-rimmed ones. He wore a dark t-shirt and short, rumpled khaki pants. Behind his exquisitely trimmed Van Dyke beard, he kept starting to form a smile. But he never did form one. He stopped instead. This equivocal facial expression, as well as his maladroit speech, made a disquieting impression. The young men apparently were his employees, but seemed more like janissaries or even slaves. That they and Dale were homosexuals was plain, though his own flamboyant persona was largely a mere concession to the type. Jake and Chad got the feeling that behind his tall forehead lurked a serious mind, or at least one in constant calculation. His chair sat on a rise only a few feet high. He encouraged the two to step up and take a seat in a pair of other chairs there. Chad looked at Jake, who nodded. They saw Dale grinding his teeth as they sat down. "The Pretender will make payback, or else," he said. He looked at them. "We got him here." He tossed his thumb over his shoulder. "What do you mean?" Jake asked. "Did you kidnap Block?" "Not for money. We arrested," Dale said. Are you keeping him prisoner here? You gave me the opportunity. What about police and FBI? Chad asked. Dale's face was a slightly irritated blank. What about them? Won't they arrest you? Suddenly they heard Greta saying, get me in closer. They turned and saw two young men obeying her command by bringing her wheelchair almost flush with the rise. That's good, boys, she said. I'll be listening for a while. She seemed used to ordering them around. They looked pleased to be in her presence. Chad had a hard time breaking off his gaze as she warmly looked back at him, but he did, because Jake was saying to Dale, don't you know that Block is dangerous? He funded Kill 'Em All. Aren't you aware that he's a G-man? Dale interrupted. He chuckled. I myself fund truth-tellers, Bible humans, people for common sense, patriot Americans, Christ crusaders, monkey and round, kind life forms for moderation, plus more. Our class interests demand the prevention of mobocracy. Mobocracy, Chad frowned. The biggest enemy of democracy is the people, as we like to say. So you and Block own all the horses and fix all the races, said Jake slowly. Why do you hate him? The pretender fooled me, Dale answered. He got me to put up most of the funding for Sustain. You worked on Sustain, did you not? He asked Jake. What do you mean? I tested your DNA. You don't think I know who you are? Dale shrugged. Jake McAllister. I knew your name before all this. Welcome. Thank you. Chad looked at Jake. He knows us from our DNA? Jake nodded reluctantly. Every institution gathers it. The Army got yours. And Hollywood got her face, Dale joked, referring to Greta. We didn't have to take a blood sample from Miss O. Jake allowed that Sustain used some of his research. Earth needs population control, Dale went on. Who could disagree with that? But I found out Sustain has nothing to do with that. No, Sustain is a gain-of-function testing to stop certain groups' fertility, not general fertility. I paid unawares. A bioweapon, Jake asked. Ethnically targeted, Dale nodded. Which ethnicity? Dale drew a long breath and sighed. I'm a gay man. So that's not an ethnicity. It targets non-Jews, Dale said evenly. I told you my sex to let you know that I can't be called a bigot. Jake leaned forward. Let me get this straight. Block wants to shrink non-Jewish populations? His group does, the Love Foundation. Why? Then Jake remembered Block saying that the nations would die, and this was a goal. And he remembered Andrews telling him, long ago at school, that God's chosen people waged holy war on the nations, quote-unquote. He saw the shape of something he had barely suspected before. He heard Chad concluding angrily, he wants to kill every country except Israel. Dale grunted. I don't believe it, Jake tried to say, but the words died in his throat. I'm gay, I can tell some truths. It gets worser. I thought we had a relationship. Dale patted Jake's hand chastely to calm himself. Not that I complain about being a venture capitalist, win, lose, but nobody likes getting lied out of $1 billion. He'll make payback. Go on, said Chad. Dale started and stopped to smile again. Mr. McAllister, he addressed Jake, it surprises me that they didn't give you a medal for GAI. Kidding. They fucked you, too. The Love Foundation. Lovey-dovey, he grimaced. Institutes and foundations and committees. How sick they make me. And how many I run. He sighed and went on. GAI is their revenge or something. It's having fun. It's fun to them. What do you think you mean? Jake asked icily. They used your work and others to justify great ape integration, to torture the nations. To torture them before shrinking them. Truth. Israelis? Chad wanted to know. The main lab is there, Dale told him. The political organizations are everywhere. It can't be Israelis, Jake said angrily. They aren't an ethnicity or a race. He was about to say something more, but stopped short. Mr. McAllister, you aren't gay, Dale said gently. Just a genius. Jake's face had a stricken, faraway look. Chad and Dale heard Greta say, Kyle, being gay doesn't protect anybody from Jews. Dale said defensively, you think I don't know that, Miss O? Then he addressed Jake and Chad. I don't want their weapon to eradicate me. I want to live. I want to stop it, but don't know how, and I'm afraid. You hear that, Miss O? I am afraid. But why should you worry about fertility? Chad asked him. Dale tapped his fingers grimly on the glass surface of the desk. Then he replied, more than fertility. You mean it's a death weapon, yes. Oh, fertility is involved, but the real functioning of the weapon. Dale shook his head and shrugged with a shudder. Could you make Block stop it? Dale answered before Chad finished the question. Not a bit. Anyway, I know more science than he does. I was just thinking, maybe that could be the payback you want. Dale shrugged. Thank you, Mr. Bingham. Jake spoke slowly as if he were working on a difficult problem. The bioweapon could be delayed by prolonging their fun. Prolong, G.A.I.? Dale frowned. Doubt that could satisfy them forever. No, so I could offer them interbreeding, human-ape interbreeding. That isn't possible. Jake smiled. Who's the genius? Dale looked incredulous. You could really do that? How? Chromosome fusing or what? Jake stared at him. Get me and Chad into Israel. By the way, what's the lab over there? Hadassah Universities? The Elie Wiesel Medical Research Center. I could get you a false identity and make Block recommend you. I can also make him announce he's on sabbatical. No, Greta struggled to leave her wheelchair, but grimaced in pain and fell back. No, don't you do it, Jake. It's disgusting. Disgusting. Greta, trust him, Chad said. Dale got to his feet and said, I'm sorry, Miss O. Anything to survive, as my daddy used to say. Oh, I don't mind an interbreeding mess of humans and apes. It only means I'll get poked with hairier dicks. End of chapter 17. Chapter 18, Friendliness and Culture, page 145. Friendliness and Culture, chapter 18. Dale put them up in separate suites. Chad went occasionally to visit Greta in hers. In its large rooms with drapes covering the stone walls and plate glass window, beyond which splashed small fountains and gardens part indoors and out, he showed her how his prosthetic limbs came on and off. Once they watched Liberation on the wall screen TV, and she pointed out many of the movie's flaws. Jake spent most of his time with Dale. They discussed the genetics research Dale funded for Block. Dale helped Jake to understand what Block's cabal was doing. It was standard biological weapons work. Jake got him to provide all the documentation he had. Dale had a good library wing full of old-fashioned paper books and a wide table of polished oak. Jake worked there into the night. He was eating a late dinner and reading when Chad came in to talk with him. Did you really want to reduce the world's population? Chad asked. Not with a bioweapon, Jake answered. Dale told me that all the witnesses of our raid on Block are dead. Block's housekeeper died too? Chad nodded yes. He looked at the book Jake was reading. Studying how to mix monkeys and people? No, history. This is a good library. Jake closed the book after removing a piece of notepaper from it. Which history? The French Revolution, Bolsheviks, World War II, the Holodomor? That's misspelled, Holodomor, bottom 145. I was studying Israel's history, too. Look at this interesting note I made. Jake unfolded the piece of notepaper, shielding it with his hand from any view except Chad's. The note read, We are being recorded. We will not mix apes and humans. I will make a bioweapon against apes. Must do this in Israel to confirm that they're developing a bioweapon. Then he reached for the last morsel of his meal and managed to eat the piece of notepaper with it. Chad understood. He shrugged. Biology fascinates me, sir. Dale will have us ready to go tomorrow, Mr. Bingham. You'd better tell Greta. Yes, sir. Before Chad left, he turned and said, Too bad she's not really your sister. In her suite, Greta was exercising, practicing standing up from her wheelchair. Dale's doctor said she would need the wheelchair for 2 weeks, and she wanted to prove him wrong. She wheeled to the door to answer it. Chad came in. She smiled warily because she knew he and Jake would depart for their mission at any time. She talked for a while, then waited to hear what he had to say. Did you have a thing with Block? She frowned. A thing? Did you have sex with him? She said incredulously, Why do you think that? You seemed pretty familiar with him when we captured him. She squared away her wheelchair in a firmer, combative position. No, I didn't sleep with him. I knew him as just another bald in the industry. Bald. Will you suspect me of sleeping with everyone I know? Just the ones I suspect. She laughed. I'm sorry for laughing. She put up her hand for just a second. I never had a jealous admirer before. How about a jealous husband? Chad entered the room fully and sat down on the sofa. He beckoned to her. She spun the wheelchair away from him. Greta. Suddenly he was at her ear, making as if to kiss it, but didn't kiss. Instead, he gripped her shoulder and whispered in her ear that Dale was recording everything they were doing and saying. Then he told her Jake's secret. She listened intently and seemed to melt with relief when she learned that Jake would not be mixing apes and humans. She spun back around. I guess you're here to tell me you and Jake are leaving. He nodded. Tomorrow. How long will the mission take? He shrugged. He didn't know. You'll come back to me. You have to, she said. Will you be safe? Now she beckoned for him, and she kissed him on his ear and whispered, yes, I will, because I'm not underage. Chad's innocent-looking face grew fierce in astonishment. You think they're like that? She cut him off by nodding. Then she stood up and bear-hugged every inch of her body against his. He heard her saying over his shoulder, barely audibly, you're everything I've wanted. I'm sorry I'm not good enough for you. You'll come back, won't you? He felt her tears on his good arm as she sank to the floor and hugged his prosthetic leg. He got her back on her feet. I'll come back for you, he said, if I survive. For a crazy moment, he clasped her whole body as if he were almost trying to break her back. Then he left. Jake had suspected Dale of recording everything ever since he saw Dale doing something weird. One night, he had found Dale waiting outside the library. Dale was standing partly in the dark, half naked with one of his employees who was fully naked. Dale stared at Jake with wide, haunted eyes. Jake didn't interpret this as a sexual come-on, but only as a silent confession of psychological agony. Since then, he had considered Dale to be trustworthy only generally. He checked the library for hidden cameras and found one. But why was Dale so weird? Was he neuroatypical? Jake wondered about it until visiting Dale's suite, unannounced, to tell him he no longer needed the library. He found Dale staring at a paper photograph, obviously taken decades ago. Without greeting and without moving his eyes off the faded image, Dale said, they were so good to me, the Rosenbaums. Nobody liked the egghead but them. That's me. They showed me a world of friendliness, culture. They had paintings. They actually bought paintings. My parents never hung a picture or owned any book except the Bible. Classical music. Mrs. Rosenbaum had recordings of it. She actually kept music recordings. Can you believe it? Their house was a refuge. All art. That world. That only world. Didn't you begin with an interest in computers? Jake asked. No, Dale said. He looked at Jake, apologizing for that, what you saw out there in the hall, I mean. Forget it, you didn't mean anything. Hard to know what one means, Dale said. Mrs. Rosenbaum introduced me to Mr. Litvak. He was her frequent dinner guest. He played classical guitar. I was interested in that. He took an interest in me. The guitar lessons were only a ruse. Mrs. Rosenbaum didn't even care what happened to me. She approved it, said my relationship with Mr. Litvak would teach me gentleness and humility and non-aggression. I kicked the drugs later. Besides, I developed a taste for classical music and other things. He showed Jake the photo. That's her, Louise Rosenbaum. Jake looked at the photo. The fat, starchy woman in it had night-dark eyes. They were Jews, Dale whispered, as if afraid of the long-dead woman's hearing him. How could they be so good and yet so... He didn't finish the question and dropped the photo back in his nightstand. So I had to get away from all that. Computers, Jake said. Dale nodded after a long moment. Good night, Mr. Dale. I finished reading everything I needed. Paragraph break and new scene. Jake and Chad stood facing Greta and Dale at his desk. Dale explained that he had readied everything for Jake and Chad's departure. He booked a hotel in Tel Aviv and had a car waiting to drive them to a private airport where they would board his own jet scheduled to take off for Israel in an hour. He had furnished the two with new clothes, new IDs, a secure new laptop, and rather lovely luggage. Greta looked clean, healthy, cheerful, but her exercises had loosened one of her bandages, which had to be reaffixed, and she was keeping herself from scratching at it. "Come, before you go," Dale had something to show them. He led them down the hall of Mondrian's and pointed out their qualities. Another hall of paintings, this time by several artists, had some personal favorites. "Louise owned this," he pointedly remarked to Jake about a charcoal sketch. The Tchaikovsky music which he had played over the small speakers in the hall gave his words extra warmth. Jack and Chad retrieved their luggage and all four went outside in the bright sunshine and then entered the garage. Its fluorescent-lit expanse contained more than 20 vintage vehicles. "The car will pick you up here," Dale said, starting and stopping a smile. "What about Black?" Jill asked. Dale nodded affirmatively. "You should have no trouble at Ellie Weasel." The pretender cooperated after persuasion. Unfortunately, he is unable to talk now. Greta quipped, "Kyle means he's sleeping with the fishes." She turned to him, "Right?" "Not all of us balds are bad, Miss O." Chad and Greta both silently noted this confirmation that Dale had recorded them. "He's good now, anyway," Greta said. "Good and dead," Chad said. Dale chuckled. "You're bloodthirstier than a sack of cats, Miss O. You're no slouch yourself, Kyle." Dale touched Chad's good arm and joked, "I'm a queen myself. I'll take good care of yours." Then Dale looked at both Jake and Chad and smiled. It was a full smile that made him look years younger. "You're the bravest people. Thank you," he said. "I agree," said Greta. Jake shook Dale's hand. Dale gave him two of the genetics books from his library and returned Chad's .44 Magnum along with extra ammo. Chad stared at the gun for a long moment. When he looked up, Dale and Greta were gone and their car arrived. And that's where chapter 18 ends. So, strange twist, I think you could say. Anyway, I've been Alex Linder reading to you from The Eradicator by Mike Smith. This was chapter 17 and 18. We have a few more to go. Thanks for being with me today. And as always, everything is archived permanently stored at vnnforum.com for your edification. Thanks for being with me, and I'll be back with you again for more from The Eradicator.